You can let us know what you think. 0-2-8-9-0-3-3-1-0-5. We're on the countdown, of course, to the World Cup. Now, the Samaritans are looking for volunteers. I want to speak to Alan Heron, who's one of the team. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Yeah, you couldn't exist without the volunteers. Is this another trawl? You're looking for some special people?
Yes, I suppose we're looking for listening volunteers first and foremost. But there's also other things you can do in every branch within Samaritans. So we can use what we call non-listening volunteers. They don't have to have the full amount of training or anything like that. And there's a number of roles, like in committees and things like that. So there's quite a lot of things to do. So we've kind of tried to open up our organisation a bit to people who might be interested in helping us, but maybe just not be interested in doing the listening aspect, which is understandable.
You do seem to emphasise the word listening. You're there to listen. You're not there to give advice.
No, definitely not. We regard it as one of the cornerstones of the organisation. We're a non-judgmental organisation, so therefore giving advice is just is no good for the listener, we find. And the chances are that that person has called us has probably had a lot of advice, and maybe most of it, perhaps, is not maybe the advice that they need. So what we do is by listening, is to give them the space to talk about their feelings and maybe discuss things as a result of that. But at no stage are we going to say, you know, you should do this, you should do that. I think it would be a good idea if you did that. Because they need to take ownership of their future if they can. So what you're really trying to do is to give them some hope, first and foremost, and then work through the issues which are affecting them, and hopefully by the end of the call you might help them point a direction that's going to help themselves in the future.
But I'm just wondering how you train someone to do that, because a lot of what you're asking people to do isn't natural. And I'll give you this scenario. Say a 17-year-old girl phones you and she's pregnant and she is in an absolute dilemma and she's afraid to tell her parents and she's worried and she's concerned and she's considering having an abortion and she's distraught and she's spilled all of that emotion out to the person that's listening. What does the Samaritan do?
Well, the Samaritan, again, as I said before, would explore those feelings and how the girl on the phone reacts to that is open to question. But ultimately, the decision on whether she has to abort the child, it has to remain with her, as far as we're concerned. You know, it's not for us to say you should or you shouldn't take it, because that wouldn't be right as far as being a Samaritan. At the same time, what we can do as a result of our service is we can what's called signpost people maybe down to take more better qualified advice, more professional advice. That is, if the caller would like to do that. But at no stage, again, are we going to say, well, maybe you should phone the perhaps the rape crisis. It depends on how the child was,
was conceived.
Child going to be born, was conceived. So, you know, there are other organisations that will provide or can provide that sort of specialised help, which we, you know, they can get into more practical details of which we wouldn't have that sort of knowledge. But at the same time, even if they use those other organisations, any caller who contacts us, they can still have a parallel sort of support with us at any time.
So but if they ask you for advice, if that child was to say, you know, I'm so afraid to tell my parents will never be able to cope with this, should I tell them or not? Do you give advice then?
No, because again, it's for the young woman to finally make that decision. But by exploring how she feels at the point of the time of the phone call, and in general, you can maybe come to a few suggestions. You could say, "Have you thought of maybe doing this and that?" You know, it puts other thoughts into her mind, and it may allow her to hopefully make that decision on her own.
Having this short conversation with you and having spoken to people from your organisation before, it reminds me that to be a Samaritan, you have to be pretty skilled at what you're doing. Those from the community who would be of, say, great religious belief, or those who would have a high moral standing, or those who would be trying to right the wrongs of the world, they'd probably be no good as Samaritans.
Well, that's an interesting, that's just what you mentioned there is interesting in relation to people's own religious convictions, and particularly volunteers. You know, we have a lot of volunteers throughout our organisation within the UK and Ireland who would have very deeply held convictions, religious convictions. And what we're asking them to do is almost put their convictions, deeply held or whatever, at the door when they become a Samaritan. In other words, if they join the organisation, they need to understand why we do that. And if it's not for them for any reason, and we would respect that very much so, then, you know, that wouldn't be for them. But many volunteers are able to do that. It's like leaving your baggage at the door. And that includes all of us, you know, because we might have all our things, we might all our views perhaps, you know, but what we're asking people to do is you need to suspend that effectively and give your best as a Samaritan. And that is if you want to be a Samaritan. And that's the final thing, you know. So with those people of those type of issues, we understand that, and we can have conversations with those potential volunteers at the time, even before they become a volunteer.
I imagine those who come forward to express an interest, do half of them make it to be volunteers, or three quarters of them?
I would say more. I would say probably three quarter. But that's just me saying that.
Yeah,
I was part of our training team at once, but in a rough, I would estimate around about three quarter would probably make it through. Another maybe half to three quarter. It just depends. Some people, as I say, maybe have their own views, and maybe it's not the right time for them. Maybe, you know, some people have maybe they want to join because they've suffered depression in the past, and they feel that they're in a better place, and they want to give something back. Which a lot of volunteers, I know that we volunteers who do that. Mm-hmm. And but you know, it would be wrong for us to allow someone who isn't maybe in a good place to get upset with a caller. That wouldn't be good for the caller, and it wouldn't be good for the volunteer. So, when you say that the skills we all have enough skills as far as listening. It's whether you want to apply them and how you want to apply them. And I suppose, do you care about someone that you've never met before? And that is, for me, on a personal level, the key. Can I give my best to this person who I'll never meet, and I may never speak to again, in all likelihood? And that really is it. And then you form I do part of selection interviews as well. So if you form that opinion, well and good. If it's fine, everything's fine. But if it's not, then you can explore that with the potential volunteer at an interview and through the training. You know, there's rough edges off all of us. You know, and none of us are perfect as volunteers. We're not saints. We're Samaritans.
Yeah, it's a good point. I can see that almost on your slogan. Alan, one final, probably difficult question, and it is as follows. You're the volunteer, the phone rings, the person on the end of the phone is a 15-year-old boy who says to you in a quite a distraught manner that he is being abused by his uncle, and he tells you who the uncle is. In the burst of conversation, you've all that information in your ear. What do you do?
Well, as regards what we do, we're well aware of the new safeguarding issues, which in fact all bodies like ourselves must respect. And really, I suppose, no matter what the lad tells us, if he doesn't or chooses not to give us any information that would identify himself, then we cannot effectively do anything about that. However, if he does willingly give us his name and a number, then we have a process which would flag that up for further help and support.
So if he comes through, he says, my name is John X and my uncle is Uncle whoever, and he lives at, and you've got all the information in the first two or three sentences, and he's distraught. You've got that information. What is the flagging up process?
Well, the volunteer doesn't make any decisions on that. We have a process within Samaritans, and we have what's called safeguarding officers within each of our branches. And that's really relayed through our leaders and then on to the person who the safeguarding officer is to take a decision on how we will take it forward. But it's not down to the volunteer to do that. But I would stress we need all the information of where the person is, an address or an address, probably an address more importantly, but a telephone number as well. But that's only if the young person is comfortable giving us that. And we find quite a lot of young people do not want to do that because of the situation they're in and because maybe they don't trust people in perceived places of authority, including Samaritans. Let's be honest, we're adults. So you have to really get their confidence and their trust. And then if they're in a threat to them, and if we can get them to give us that information, we will act upon it because we're on a legal obligation to do that.
It must be a very harrowing job, but you are looking for volunteers. I'm sure there's many a conversation that is uplifting and you go home feeling that you've made a real contribution to the person's life. If people do want to express an interest, how do they go about it, Alan?
Well, they can contact us on our website, which is at 8 branches in Northern Ireland, which we would have an interest in. And the telephone numbers are on each of those. And they will give details of where the addresses is and so forth. And if they want to give us a call even on either of our branches, again, we will get, if the volunteer involved cannot help them, then we will get somebody to give them a call back on that. We're very keen for people to come forward. I'd be certain, as I could be in life, that people are listening to this programme now and thinking, do you know what? I thought about that, but I didn't do anything about it. You just say to them, take a step forward and see if you fancy it, because you have nothing to lose.
Okay, and how do they contact you again?
On our website, it's www.samaritans.org. And I'll give all the list of all the branches. There are 8 branches: Belfast, Craigavon, Uri, Derry, Coleraine, Omagh, Newry. I think that's about 8, and Ballymena.
Lovely. Just one final, briefly before you go. If I do ring the Samaritans and I'm talking to a volunteer, am I being recorded?
No. We don't record any calls whatsoever.
Okay.
It's a fully confidential service, and that wouldn't be, needless to say, that wouldn't be confidential. No, people can have total confidence in our service as far as that's concerned. We don't even need to know. We can't see the number. We don't need to know that, and we don't record it. And we don't even ask the person, what's your telephone number? We might ask them their first name, but the most important thing is to give them the support. The emotional support that they obviously feel they need by contacting us in the first place.
Okay, Alan, thank you very much. If you want to put your head above the parapet and express an interest in being part of what is a very worthwhile service, do go to their website. The Samaritans are looking for volunteers.